Support for this day in esoteric political history comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is the only software your business will ever need. Featuring a suite of integrated business applications, Odoo connects your business operations together so you can get more done in less time. Odoo has apps for everything: CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, marketing, manufacturing, you name it, Odoo's got it. To learn more, visit odoo.com/thisday. That's odoo.com/thisday. Hello and welcome to This Day in Esoteric Political History from Radiotopia. My name is Jody Avergan. This day, August 28th, 1987, the political world is starting to gear up for next year's presidential election, the election of 1988, and all of that usual jockeying that's going on for early frontrunner status, that is in the air, especially for the Democrats. It is already a very crowded field, and among that crowded field is one Joe Biden, senator from Delaware. Biden, as we know, has run for president a number of times before finally winning in 2020, but he ran for the nomination in 1984. Now he was trying again, and as it had every time, it did not go so well. The reason for that was in large part because of what happened late in the summer of 1987, what we are talking about today. During a debate in Iowa with other Democratic hopefuls, Joe Biden offered a closing statement in which he shared some personal details and some really stirring language. He asked why it was that he was the first in his family to go to college, to escape the mining town that he grew up in. He offered a tribute to the hardworking people in his family and his hometown, and he argued that it was the Democratic Party that had given him, quote, a platform on which to stand. By all accounts, this was a really moving speech, one he'd kind of used before. People in the room really felt like it was Biden who won that debate and had positioned himself as one of the key voices in the Democratic Party. But then, in the coming days, the questions started to bubble up. As it turns out, a number of those phrases and anecdotes were lifted from speeches that were given by a British politician, Neil Kinnock. So there's a mistake. Whoops. So let's talk about the plagiarism, or if you're being generous, the lack of attribution, or whatever you want to call it, in Joe Biden's 1987 campaign, and kind of something that has been a bit of a pattern for Biden for quite some time. So here to discuss, as always, are Nicole Hemmer of Vanderbilt and Kelly Carter Jackson of Wellesley. Hello there.
Hello, Jody.
Hey there.
There's a lot to get to here, including, as I said, you know, Biden kind of having a little bit of this as a penchant. I want to start with the actual language itself, the stuff he says, and then the stuff that Neil Kinnock had said. Neil Kinnock, we should also note, is running for British PM right around the same time. Biden, I think, had traveled to, you know, they were clearly familiar with each other and their politics aligned largely. But you want to break down some of these phrases? First, let's start with what Biden says in that closing speech. Someone want to read him?
I mean, the fact that he's using the fact his name, that his name Biden has never, like, there are no other Bidens to have come out of this town, to have existed in, what, 1,000 generations? Is that the exact word?
Yeah. Yep. He says, why is it that Joe Biden is the first in his family to ever go to a university? Is it because I'm the first Biden in 1,000 generations to get a college and graduate degree? That I was smarter than the rest? Those same people who read poetry and wrote poetry and taught me how to sing verse? Is it because they didn't work hard?
And then he goes on to describe like them working underground in the mines for 12 hours a day. Were they weak who worked in the mines for 12 hours a day and then came out and played football for 4 hours? And so he's creating this image of all of these hardworking, smart, creative people who never had the kind of chance that he had. Neither he nor his wife's family in 1,000 generations had ever had the opportunity to go to college.
It's so, 1,000 generations for me.
1,000 generations. It's okay. So many generations.
It is like a lot of generations. So I'm gonna do the A to B comparison, and we'll play the audio maybe of these two back at the end here. But so as we said, Joe Biden says, "Why is it that Joe Biden is the first in his family to ever go to university?" Neil Kinnock had said in a speech of his, "Why am I the first Kinnock in 1,000 generations to be able to get to university?" And then Biden says, Was it because I'm smarter than the rest? Kinnock had said, was it because all of our predecessors were thick? So at least Biden knew that the word thick maybe wouldn't translate to an American audience. But Biden's speech about those people who would read poetry and write poetry, Kinnock had said, those people who could sing and play and recite and write poetry. The exact phrases and, you know, in some sense, the memories are taken. But can you guess?
I call BS. Who's writing poetry? I just want to know.
Maybe the kids before the not the Bidens.
Because before the internet, what else are you going to do? You're going to sing and write poetry.
It sounds beautiful and illustrious and descriptive and poetic and all the things. But I don't think it would take anyone very long after listening to that to be like, you know, this does not sound right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, Kinnock has also, I just want to include this too, because Kinnock talks about his ancestors working in the mines and then coming up and playing soccer. Like, these are one-to-one parallels, but with just enough adaptations for an American audience that you're like, oh, Joe.
But wait. Nikki, this is my favorite part of the whole thing, is Kinnock says, talking about his ancestors, those people who could work 8 hours underground and then come up and play football. And then Biden says, my ancestors who worked in the coal mines of northeastern Pennsylvania and would come up after 12 hours and play football. So see, they're talking about different sports because over there, football is soccer. Over here, football is football. But he just gets to use the word football. It is just like,
I had translated European football.
It is such
football,
a
man.
Perfect little thing. If Connecticut said soccer, then Biden would have to translate. But no, it works perfectly.
Well, I think it's worth talking about that Kinnock speech, because it was something that was created in the middle of his campaign against the Tories and Margaret Thatcher. But this was like one of the most innovative, especially for the 1980s, and sort of orchestrated speeches, because it was part of a commercial that was put together by the director of the movie Chariots of Fire, and the music was written by the composer for the movie. And this was in the 1980s, one of the biggest blockbuster films. And so you had real firepower behind this. And then that commercial, which doesn't win Kinnock the prime ministership, doesn't win Labor the election, but becomes this masterful, famous, circulating across the ocean for politicians to learn from kind of speech. So it's not even like this obscure speech that he's borrowing from.
Yeah, that's the thing for me. Like, if he had found this in some book that he read about as a child, okay, sure. But the fact that this is a commercial, a highly produced commercial that becomes
contemporary.
Yeah, that's super popular. You know, of course, someone is going to hear this and say, wait a second, what?
So let's get into a little bit of how that comes out, and then we'll circle back to kind of what it says about Biden and the way he, but, you know, the details, the TikTok of how people put this together is pretty interesting, because, you know, again, I think if this were now, within seconds, people would have flagged it on Twitter or whatever. This did take a little bit. It was into the early weeks of September before people start to really put it together and stuff appeared in the papers.
Well, it's such a cloak and dagger beginning to the story. So it starts on September 11th. It's about almost 2 weeks after the debate. And there was a Des Moines Register reporter, David Yepsen, who was having breakfast that morning. And you can imagine, like, any sort of Iowa journalist is going to be in constant contact with the campaigns who are in Iowa at the time. And he's approached by a campaign staffer for Mike Dukakis, who felt the hot breath of the Biden campaign on the back of his neck. And he says he has something for Yepsen, walks him out of the hotel, opens the trunk of his car, could be anything, turns out to be a videotape. And so Yepsen takes this back to the office. And what they had done, what the Dukakis campaign had done, was they had made like that side-by-side comparison that you were talking about, Jody. And, you know, when it's set up like that, when it's like spliced together, then it becomes very clear that this is borrowed material.
And then, you know, this story does explode and it becomes a national story and it starts to get written about in the national press.
Yeah, Maureen Dowd writes about this in September, and she talks about how, you know, Biden was a huge fan of Kinnock and saw him as this you know, man of character and was so taken by his speech, and that everyone knew that he was a fan of this speech, that that he was moved by it. And so it's kind of not a surprise that he would want to lift or take or be inspired by some of the language and then use it. But that to me, I think, was wild, that everyone knows that you're a fan. Everyone knows that you love
Well, I want to come in with a Biden apologia, which is that Biden was using this revised version or paraphrased version of Kinnock's speech. But he had many times on the campaign trail said to paraphrase Neil Kinnock. Yep. So he had acknowledged that this was where it was coming from. But there were times then that that would drop out. And the way that the Biden camp explained it in 1987 was, look, he had 2 minutes. He had to squeeze in his closing message and he just forgot. He was trying to trim things down as he was like giving this part of his stump speech, and Kinnock's name just dropped out.
I mean, how long does it take to say, to paraphrase Neil Kinnock? And maybe if you're really pressed for time, maybe you take out the, you know, maybe you take out the anecdote about playing football for 4 hours and you replace it with to paraphrase Neil Kinnock. You know, there are ways to just throw just it in.
According to Kinnock, you know, something like that. So what I think is really funny about this story is that the biographer of Biden, a man by the name of Jeff Wilzer, writes a book called The Book of Joe, and he recalls this whole episode where Joe Biden walks off the stage and he's feeling like, nailed it, you know, like this was great, people are crying, people are so emotional about this speech, he's feeling really good about it, and one of his aides leans in and tells him, hey, listen, you forgot about Kinnock, you forgot to credit him. And Joe Biden's like, oh, shit. Like, you know, he's like, well, you know, I've always cited him before, so it shouldn't be a problem. He realized he didn't think that this would explode.
Yeah, that's interesting. But, you know, this question of if Biden had just cited him in the way that he'd been citing him on the campaign trail, I mean, it may have prevented this specific incident. But as we've discussed before, you know, scandals are often scandals when they play into a sort of existing, at least idea, if not truth. And it does tap into this larger worry that Joe Biden plays a little fast and loose with his stories and his stump speeches and so forth. And so, again, this wasn't just a one-off incident. People started to then dig, and they found not just Kinnock lifting, but other stuff too throughout the years.
Yeah, the day after that car trunk meeting, the New York Times runs a story about Joe Biden plagiarizing in law school. And this was a much more serious in many ways charge because he had plagiarized a giant kind of law review article and had to plead his case to remain in law school. And this even fed into, you know, Biden had inflated his credentials when he was being asked questions. He said that he was in the top half of his law school. That wasn't true. And so you begin to get this sense, as you were saying, Jody, of all of these things coming together to suggest Biden isn't truthful. Biden steals material from other people. Like, we can't really know Joe Biden because he's not honest.
And I think the problem is people are much more willing to forgive sort of a verbal gaffe, like, they know that you're speaking on the spot. There's cameras in front of you. There's a tendency to be forgetful or nervous even. But writing a paper, like something that you actually have to sit down and process through, people are much less forgiving of that kind of plagiarism because it's not just, oh, an afterthought, I got caught up, I was nervous. It was, no, you intentionally left out this material or lifted this material without citation, and that does raise a lot of flags.
The law school plagiarism thing is also interesting because another sort of element here is that the Bork hearings are starting, and Biden, that's really where he makes his, you know, makes his platform is kind of, and so just like any sort of like Joe Biden's legal credentials are on shaky ground, probably undercuts a little bit of the place where he's trying to make his mark. But yeah, you get this back and forth. One thing worth noting is this is, in a way, you know, a sense like a viral video before that really existed. I mean, now, you know, it's funny, like now there wouldn't be the trunk of the car. There wouldn't be the VHS tape. It would just go on, you know, John Fetterman or whatever, who, you know, whoever's good at social media these days would put it on Twitter within like an hour and that would take off. But this had sort of the same effect. The video was flying around, is getting copied, it's getting passed around, and people weren't really sure of the provenance of it, which gave it this sort of like illicit secret information kind of vibe to it and virality to it. Mm-hmm. Biden tries to stamp it down. He produces video of like 20 other times that he's told this story and credited Kinnock. But again, it doesn't really, it sticks. And because, as we were saying, it sticks because of it plays into these other things, including stuff he'd made up or stuff he'd played fast and loose with about his role in the civil rights movement. You know, sometimes he would talk about like, I marched, and he was probably using that euphemistically, like I had solidarity with the civil rights movement, but he actually never actually marched.
Those are two totally different things. I marched.
Kelly's like, that's
like,
not a euphemism.
I put a sign in my yard. That is not.
He said in this house.
That's crazy. Yeah.
So, you know, his advisors knew this about him, and they're getting in his ear being like, you gotta lock, you know, you gotta tighten it up, you gotta lock this stuff down. But it really does damage his campaign. And I mean, I don't know, do we credit this with kind of his campaign flaming out a little bit?
Oh, I do. I mean, I think that this was when the press coverage of Biden turns really negative, and it becomes clear that he's not going to be able to dig out of this hole. So he drops out on the 23rd. So we're talking about like a week and a half after this story started to break, which suggests that this was a big part of it. And you mentioned earlier the Bork hearings were about to start. And so he had to make a choice. Like, am I going to be the leading person on the Judiciary Committee who is holding Bork accountable for his record? Or am I going to be, you know, one of seven presidential candidates who will eventually flame out?
So this does live on in a sense of every time Biden has kind of run again, this kind of stuff has either been dug back up or like happened again, right? And there were stories about the what was it in 2020 he told the story about like Corn Pop or whatever, you know. It's just like, who is Corn Pop?
Who was a real guy?
It turns out, but you know, like people just kind of are like, what about
Corn Pop?
What's up with these?
I think about Corn Pop like once a week.
You know, what's up with these stories and how much embellishment is there, you know? And it's also funny that he kind of, Biden has like owned this to some extent, but I would say in 2019 he gave an interview where he was basically like, my life would have been different had I just uttered the phrase like Kinnock and then said the exact same thing at that 1987 Iowa debate, which may be true, right, as we just discussed, but
that's
like, yeah, but
if,
to me
to
telling that
won.
Story almost is like the same kind of embellishment of whatever. It's like, you're, it's a little extra, you know, it's like a little much. Like, you don't have to go there and make this perfect story that like, oh, everything would have changed had I just included that citation. But, you know, again, Kinnock and Biden ended up kind of meeting and joking about this, I guess. And but also, you know, as we said, they were like both, they're both politicians who have very similar politics and very similar ambitions. And so they found common cause through the years as well. Did Biden refer to Kinnock as his best speechwriter at one point in a sort of jokey way?
When he introduced him to his staff during the 2007 presidential race, he gives him that intro, which is pretty amazing. And I think speaks to, part of this speaks to a very different media and political environment 30 years later. And part of it speaks to how important sometimes it is that some of these things come out early. Like a 30-year-old story about plagiarism is just not going to leave a mark in the in the 2020 campaign.
And the way that Biden makes fun of himself a little bit is, you know, or having a senior moment or something like that, people are much more understanding and playful.
Yeah, I mean, he sort of embraced, he sort of owned that and managed to somehow at least have it be like people go, oh, that's just Biden being Biden or whatever. And obviously, like, our, for better or worse, probably for worse, our, like, kind of appetite for just straight up lying and lifting is like
you know
been corroded a little
bit. Do it anymore. I mean, I'm sure this is a-
except for Melania Trump,
I know,
just straight up steal like, you know, at a convention.
Reads Michelle
and
Obama's
just like,
speech.
Yeah.
What got me was my word is my bond. I was like, what?
Yeah.
You don't speak like that.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yes, and that's the real lesson here, folks, as we wrap up, is that if you're going to lift language is believable.
That's right. Yeah.
So, you know, don't say, my ancestors played football 4 hours a day after working in the coal mines for 12 hours a day. People are going to be like,
I know, it's bad.
All right, that brings us to the end of this episode. Nicole Hemmer, thanks to you.
Thank you, Jody.
And Kelly Carter Jackson, thanks to you.
My pleasure.
And I started thinking as I was coming over here, why is it that Joe Biden is the first in his family ever to go to a university?
Why am I the first Kinnick in 1,000 generations to be able to get to university?
Why is it that my wife, who's sitting out there in the audience, is the first in her family to ever go to college?
Why is Glennis the first woman in her family in 1,000 generations to be able to get the university?
No, it's not because they weren't as smart. It's not because they didn't work as hard. It's because they didn't have a platform upon which to stand.
Does anybody really think that they didn't get what we had because they didn't have the talent or the strength or the endurance or the commitment? Of course not. It was because there was no platform upon which they could stand.
Radiotopia.